So first, I'd like to thank that whole series of questions that just, it was the perfect lead-in to my presentation. It makes my job a lot easier. I'm Portia Pusey, and this work that I'm about to present is part of an interdisciplinary work group that I participate in, and it's all volunteer. We get no funding for it, but we're really interested in exploring the pipeline problem in cybersecurity education, and we focused a lot on cybersecurity competitions because there's a lot of anecdotal evidence out there that they're really working for people, but what we're not seeing is a lot of rigor behind them. And so what I'd like to present today is some options for providing rigor to your competitions so that they actually can be used in an educational environment. My background is in teacher education, and so we start with assessment and evaluation to try to figure this out. Oh, I need to also start with a shameless plug. So our work group is looking for competitions to help us explore. So we'd like to explore your competitions. We have a lot of measures, and you'll see after my presentation, we have a lot of measures that we can apply. Everything's in place that we would like to apply to your competitions to help you improve the rigor behind your competition. We will never commercialize this. We would just like the right to publish your information, but the findings of this so that we can help make all competitions more rigorous and put some more learning science behind what you're doing. If we're going to use them in education, we need to make sure that what we're assessing is what we're reporting. So the other thing I need to disclose about myself is that I'm a gamer. And at one time, I was an elite healer called Sante on the Nomergen server in the World of Warcraft. And I was as an advanced player. I was a serious raider. And so I didn't mind getting pwned. But I don't think that we should be pwning our students. Pwned means, you know, when it's a variation of being owned and basically you're crushed. So we don't want to do that to our learners, and I'll explain to you a little bit why. We also don't want to make it too easy. We don't want to nerf our games to the point where they are become boring to our students. And so there's a happy medium in this process, and there's some learning science that goes behind that. So let's talk a little bit about what we know about cybersecurity competitions. They're great in general for employers, right? So we're seeing it a lot we're seeing some benefits to employers. They're able to really assess skills, see how people work in teams. They're able to measure one player against the other. So employers love these, and that's a good thing because employers have money, they fund the competitions, and our students benefit because they get jobs. That's a good thing. But let's talk about cybersecurity in education. So I perceive, and I really think of the cybersecurity competitions as a community of practice. This research was done by Laban Wenger a long time ago, and they studied apprenticeships. And if you think of cybersecurity competitions as the opportunity for novices to progress along the learning continuum to become an expert within the company of people of varying skills so that they continue to learn from the next person and the next person. And the cool thing about the Laban Wenger research is that it includes the tools as part of that learning experience. And so you can see how cybersecurity competitions with the tools and the experiences could apprentice someone into the field. There is some important research that I have to report on that discusses the difference between a novice and an expert in competition environments. Let's start with some research done in a related field in an Olympiad environment. And what the Olympiad found is people with more experience showed better performance and better outcomes. Now, the thing that they didn't report on is that because they understand the game mechanics better, or because they actually were performing better? That's an important question, because is the game mechanics getting in the way of the learning? And is it just the fact that they need to understand how the game's working? In my Warcraft example, in the beginning, you don't die a million times. They walk you through this a little bit by little bit to the point where you can stand on your own and participate in a team. The next study talks about, it talks about novices. And so novices only have this declarative knowledge. They really haven't had any hands-on practice. So the problem with that is that that we're asking them to apply. They apply their knowledge, and they haven't gotten to that point. And there was an important study that said there were no outcomes for novice players within a competition environment. And that's because they were still in the drill and practice stage. Finally, there's a study that says that if you have more experience, more ability, that you're going to be further engaged. And so that has that is supported by our own research with the National Cyber League, which is a league that is designed to be integrated into an educational environment. Full disclosure, I'm the educational chair and project manager of the National Cyber League. So just that you know, if you hear me talking about the National Cyber League, it's because I have the most experience there. What we saw is that the more competitions that our players had, the higher their engagement. But down here is the important numbers. This is our number of novice players that started at game one, game two, and game three. What we found is that we were losing novice players. And so the following year, the NCL introduced a bracketing system, which I'll describe at the end of the presentation. Here's another measure, and this is the really big measure. This is the one that I think that regardless of what kind of competition you're doing, that you can apply this measure, self-efficacy. Self-efficacy has been shown to be predictive of performance and competency, and the construct for it's very easy. The cool thing about it is it is a valid measurement and reliable for different genders, different ethnicities, of all of those underrepresented groups. And the cool thing about self-efficacy is not, because we can measure it, it has also been shown that it is manipulable. And we can develop it, and we can manage it. There was a study that took a bunch of girls, and they provided them scaffolded experiences. It was in a STEM field. And in 4 weeks, based on these scaffolded experiences, they changed their career choices towards STEM, and their skill level increased, or they changed their major towards a STEM major. 4 weeks with an intervention. So this is a really important measure, and I think it helps us decide, as we're using this in a learning environment, the problem with cybersecurity competitions is they engage the engaged. Or we may disengage the novice, but we engage the engaged. How do we reach the girls? You know you're not seeing girls in your competition in the kind of numbers that you want to see. So we need to make sure that those early experiences and the materials and support that we provide to our learners using cybersecurity competitions help develop a sense of self-efficacy among our players. So I just wanted to touch on the what and the scoring. And this presentation, I wanted to make sure that I got everything in. There's a lot of science behind this, and I would hope that you would approach me later and I can provide you information on it. There was I came in on the tail end of this research. This is developing a job performance model. It was done for three of the alphabet soups of government organizations, Department of Energy, Department of Homeland Security, and the NSA. They were looking at cybersecurity jobs. They did research and they found out the tasks that are done in several cybersecurity jobs. And then they worked with experts to determine the criticalness, how critical is this task for someone to know, and how much does this differentiate an expert from a novice. And so what the end result is that we not only know what skills are most important for people to know, if they're going to do these cybersecurity jobs, but we also know which ones are going to differentiate an expert from a novice. These tasks are weighted, so when we're talking about scoring, if you map your competition to the tasks in the job performance model, you're not only producing people who are doing the tasks that are most important and able to do the critical jobs of an expert or a master, but you're also being able to have a rigorous way of weighting your scoring in your competition. And this also has been mapped to the other alphabet soup in terms of the KUs and the KSAs, so of the NIST and the NSA. So it's already mapped there, so that if you want to make sure that your students are meeting those workforce frameworks, they're there too. This slide is just for me to remember to tell you that there is a continuum. And this is really a 3D model because knowledge, skills, and ability are definitely the three things that we're trying to get in our learners. And that for each one of those dots on that continuum, there is a different learning experience that is necessary for each type of learner. And you can't, if you take them out of their section, their little ball section, then you'll find that the learning experience will decline because you'll have either someone who's too bored or the game's too hard for them. I want to touch a little bit on learning readiness. I just want to describe to you how the brain of an expert and a novice works. Your brain develops this schema of connections when you're learning. And so a novice has very few connections, and they're sparse, and it's not connected. This is probably a more experienced learner, and there's lots of connections. And in terms of learner readiness, what we know is that experts are really good at filtering out the noise. A novice sees all the noise, and it becomes such distraction to them. And so we want to make sure for our learners that our early learners, we're not providing too much noise. We need to make sure that there's, and for our experts, we're giving them lots of noise. So this is where I go beyond my paper, because I got some feedback that said, well, what do you want me to do about this? And so we've been exploring two models that assess complexity and difficulty. And this is where, like I said, a collaboration with you and your competitions would help us to look at your competition tasks and see if your scoring correlates to these difficulty models. The first one's called VUCA. It came out of the military. And it's and the initial stands for volatility, complexity, uncertainty, and ambiguity. And these are overlapping. Each challenge could include a different level of each of these variables. Volatility is something that's constantly changing, but you pretty much know your information's reliable and you can count on at least the information you're getting. Complexity is you're getting so much information, it's good information, but it's going to take you a while to get through it. Uncertainty is that you have some information, but the cause and effect are unknown. And then ambiguity is when this is the thing that nobody's ever seen before, and that you don't even know what you don't know. There's another model created by Campbell. And he calls these decision tasks, judgment tasks, problem tasks, and fuzzy tasks. And so when it comes to these tasks, decision tasks are the very simple ones, to do or don't do. So it's incident response, scanning, do I scan or don't I scan? Then we have the judgment tasks. And these are the ones that are where it takes, you need a little information to make a decision. And there might, but there's really only one true choice, but you need a little bit more information. We would consider that diagnostic, network forensics, intrusion analysis. Then there are the problem tasks. And this is where there's no one best answer. And my favorite example of this is project management, where you just have to make a choice, triage, incident response, downtime, policies, and that. So staffing even are all parts of things. And these are things you see in competitions. CCDC has all of this in their competitions. And CCDC is my good example because that's my fuzzy example. Fuzzy is when the problem is just ill-structured. And so at CCDC, I don't know of those of you who have students who participate, it's an inherit and defend competition. And I've done some research there with coaches and players. And the funny thing about this competition is you inherit this network that has not been configured traditionally. And so the students end up in this competition with this network that is not, their systems are not configured traditionally, and they don't even know what they're going to find. And so that's a good example of the fuzzy. And so where we're taking this is we want to see when we take these the competition tasks, if we can come up with an easy way of quantifying these classifications, and then applying them and seeing if that correlates to score, so that it'll make your score more reliable and it'll actually mean something. So this year, we're going to be studying the National Cyber League's bracketing system using the efficacy, engagement. We're going to throw a little grit in there, and then at the end, we're going to be doing an assessment of their tasks based on those two complexity models, and the outcome will be contributing to something even better, a concept inventory of that can measure your students' ability before the competition, so you know what kind of tasks to give them in the after. So that is a lot of information, and I know I've summarized it so briefly. I'm sure you have some questions.
Hi, Mark Gondry in the Naval Postgraduate School. Thank you. This is super exciting. I hope that there are a lot of collaborations with people that have platforms for games that are interested in using some of these assessments. I was curious about generalizability of instruments. So you mentioned like an instrument for measuring self-efficacy, and I've heard people interested in using like game flow, which is kind of a flow.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, flow. It's a long name that begins with a C and has a lot of consonants.
Yeah, and adapted for digital games, like Sismenyele.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
I butchered his name and it's all on tape. I wondered if those need to be validated within the context of cyber competitions, or are they mature enough and been shown to generalize well enough to all types of games that we could just start to employ them?
Self-efficacy and engagement are ready to go today. So that's a really good measure. Self-efficacy is a better measure in terms of what your students are getting out. There is some sense of learning. But the self-efficacy construct is formed this way. First of all, let me just say it has to be a very, very specific task. So I would ask my students, how confident are you on a scale of either 1 to 5 or 1 to 10 that you can, I always come up with food examples, crack an egg. How confident are you that you can crack an egg on a scale of 1 to 5? You ask them, and then at the end of your competition, you ask them again. And let's hope that if you have given them scaffolded experiences on how to break an egg, that at the end they're going to report, I can break an egg at a higher, and that's been shown to be very effective and reliable. And so that's a good way, at least now, before we get these measures and we validate how difficult those challenges are in the scoring models, it's a good way to get started.
Hi, Cynthia Irvin, Naval Postgraduate School again. Your various categories of skill level, going from the bottom to fuzzy. Is there a mapping of those to Bloom's taxonomy of learning objectives so that if you're using gaming, not just in, you know, sort of all-out competitions, but in classroom experiences, that there would be this ability to map objectives of the game to learning objectives?
So they are complementary taxonomies. Bloom's taxonomy is how people apply knowledge. And for those of you who don't know, it starts at the very basic knowledge level questions, so that you would say, what color is the tablecloth? Well, you know, how bright are the lights? You ask knowledge-based questions, all the way up to synthesis, where you have to take your knowledge and you apply it to new situations. So that's knowledge. But within those different categories of knowledge, you can ask questions that are more complex or less complex. So imagine that now we're saying, let me try to come up with a good example. So we're giving, let's use enumeration, and we give them a network, and we give them a simple network. Okay, so we're asking them to apply their knowledge, and we're asking them to do a very simple task. Then we start. We start asking them within the same. I would say this is an application of knowledge. This is the apply, so it goes above knowledge. We apply that skill to a network. Then we ask them to go beyond that and enumerate a greater set of servers. And we keep moving on beyond that, and then we start adding in, and then we start getting further up in the apply. But there's still complexity grades within each of those applications of knowledge.
David Kohlbrenner from UC San Diego.
Yes.
So you were talking a lot about kind of this formalism of the scoring mechanisms and understanding how to assign point values. And I think that's wonderful. As somebody who's been doing CTS for a long time, point values are often all over the place. A lot of the challenge with assigning point values in these question-based problems, or these question-based CTFs, comes from the fact that the problems need to be extremely novel. And the moment the problem is seen by the community or any members of the community, it becomes essentially no longer interesting. And there's categories of problems that have evolved over time that everybody kind of knows how they work, but the majority of problems need to be brand new. And evaluating kind of what aspects of the problems are going to be, you know, the complexity level or the, you know, how much of it is going to be fuzzy or whatever, how do we do that when we can't show the problem to anyone ahead of time? And the moment the problem is shown to people, it becomes worthless.
Okay, yes. And so we recognize that as a problem because both of those complexity models also are contingent on your current level of expertise. An easy problem for me as a starting chef would be breaking that egg. Okay, now I'm a master chef, and now it's, you know, I'm trying to master sous vide techniques. So it's skills related to sous vide and making sure I don't kill people while making this dish. So it's a complex problem, and we haven't studied that yet. But we also recognize that competition design is really time consuming. I'm also a member of the Cybersecurity Competition Federation, and it's a group, it's an umbrella group who is trying to standardize and try to help study multiple competitions across the continuum. And so we want to investigate that problem because you're right, it does change. And what we're hoping is that we'll find a group of professionals that have these non-disclosures in place that you could reliably come to your competition and help you assign those point values. The struggle with that is that this is the reality. We know that you're creating these competitions at the nth hour. And so and you're still working those bugs out at the last minute. And until we can get to the point where some of these games can be created in advance and studied in advance, we're still going to have that problem.
All right, Senator.